we now segue into Conservatives Corral. And for the next hour, we'll be playing conservative material only. And I would love to hear from any listeners out there who are of a conservative persuasion. And believe it or not, I include myself in that. And if we don't come up with conservatives, then I'd certainly be amenable to talking to people on the air who take the alternative view, which I do not agree with, of voting for Nader or not voting at all. It's kind of the hour that we have set aside for the other points of view. Let's start off with a great American libertarian who had something of a hit back in the late 60s, Victor Lundberg. And his hit was called An Open Letter to My Teenage Son. It generated an answer song, An Open Letter to My Father. Maybe we'll play those back to back later. This is from his record, An Open Letter, a track called Dear Neighbor on Conservatives Corral.
Dear neighbor, I was sincerely sorry to hear a loved one so near to you was killed in Vietnam. Experience and years has taught me there is nothing I can say that will ease the sorrow. However, you took me to task for urging my son to go to war. I would clarify that. I do not urge anyone to go to war. I sincerely hope there is an unequivocal end to war. I only pointed out to my son I cannot tolerate a shirker. Being born in this country starts an individual out with advantages, in my estimation, that demand recompense. John Kennedy said, "Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country." I didn't even advocate my son do the asking. I only informed him if his country asks something of him within reason, he should answer. I feel protecting our freedom is well within reason. You ask me how I would feel if, because of my strict convictions, my son went to war and was killed. How do you answer a question like that? I know if he was killed drag racing or in a speeding automobile, I would feel I had failed him. By my example and love-tainted tolerance, I had failed to convince him of the importance of living by the rules. The same would hold true if he was killed in an attempted commitment of any felony. I also know if he was killed while experimenting with drugs, I would spend the rest of my life in the hell of knowing I had not given him the strength to accept reality. If my son was killed as a looter during a riot, I would live my life to eternity with a gaping, unanswered why in my mind. But you ask me how I would feel if he was killed while fighting for his country, protecting principles I was instrumental in teaching him, principles he must have felt had value enough to gamble his life to ensure their continuance. There is no way I can tell you how I would react to an indescribable tragedy in my life. However, I can tell you this. Some of the tears would be from the pride in my heart that swelled and overflowed in my eyes.
And that was Victor Lundberg starting us off on Conservatives Corral for this Tuesday, and Dear Neighbor from his record, An Open Letter to My Teenage Son. And we have our first phone caller here on Conservatives Corral. Welcome to the air.
Hello.
What's your name?
Michael.
And Michael, you kind of took me to task for referring to Victor Lundberg as a libertarian.
Yes, because I'm not a libertarian. That may be a left libertarian, and some people don't even think those exist.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that one of the basic principles of libertarianism is that you aren't obligated to do things that you haven't knowingly signed a contract in where you'll do that in exchange for something else.
Uh-huh.
Whereas Lundberg's essential point seems to be, we gave you all these things, and so you owe us, when in the absence of any sort of adult consent, so almost by definition, because his child has been a minor, he can't be obligated under libertarian principles to do anything, much less to put his life in danger in exchange for something that was given to him without his assent that in exchange he would do that.
Well, I think that's a really good point. I think you're correct. He's really, really not a libertarian.
Yeah, he may be a Republican who wants to party, but I doubt he even wants to do that. A lot of people in the LP, the Libertarian Party, at least used to be Republicans who wanted to do drugs. But I think a lot of those have, the desire to do drugs has diminished, and they've just become Republicans.
Yeah, and what's going on with the Libertarian Party these days? Do you know?
They've nominated a guy named Michael Badnarik, whom at least has the advantage that they haven't nominated him before, because before they had a tendency to do the same people over and over again, a lot like the communists.
Mm-hmm.
And in libertarian circles that I read of, some on the web and speak to some people I know, there's actually, there at least was a debate about whether they should vote for Kerry or not, because they thought that at least if there were a divided government, it would be harder for it to spend quite as much.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most people in the Libertarian Party are going to vote Libertarian and want to make their point.
The Libertarians, I know, were urging people to just show up at Central Park last Sunday. Mm-hmm. I wonder if many Libertarians showed up at all.
I don't know.
They felt that it was outrageous that the government should even be sought out for a permit to assemble.
Yeah, although at base they actually believe there shouldn't be a Central Park owned by a government. It should belong to a private individual, and that private individual would have the option of saying that people can't assemble there.
Uh-huh.
It's my main beef with them. They really want everything to be owned by someone, and the problem is that when, for example, all land is owned privately, then there's no public space in which our First Amendment rights predominate, because on private land, what the owner of the land wants goes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really a defect of their whole approach to society. I think it may result in a lot of freedom. Well, property rights are very good for people who have property, but unless you can guarantee, which they most certainly don't, that everyone will have at least some, it will mean that effectively you won't have that many rights.
Mm-hmm.
These days, the poorest person possible can go out on the mall in Washington, or at least in years past, near the White House and protest. And that, except for perhaps bogus security concerns, they have a right to do that, because there's no individual can say you can't do that, and the government isn't allowed to say it. But individuals aren't restricted by the Bill of Rights, and they can, if everything's owned, everything can be closed off.
Quite so. I want to thank you for your call to Conservatives Corral today. It's refreshing to talk to somebody who's not Radman on Conservatives Corral.
Well, I haven't heard him. What's he like?
He was on yesterday. He's beyond description.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it? Yeah. Oh, and incidentally, Ken, since I'm something of an obsessive and I understand the web a little bit, I've been archiving.
Good for you.
So you'll get a couple of CDs when this week is over.
Well, I can tell you that we are recording the entire RNC remix as MP3s.
Great.
We don't know how long it's going to take us to edit it all into individual programs and post it. So we just don't want to make any promises. But the good news is that we are recording everything.
At the same rate you're streaming?
Yeah.
Okay, because if it were a better one, I wouldn't bother. But I'm mostly trying to break them up into individual programs. So.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
well, that would be great. If you could send me a data file, that would be terrific. That would save us a lot of work.
Yeah, well, let's see how well it works.
Okay, thanks a lot for your call.
Sure,
bye-bye. This is Conservatives Corral here on the RNC Remix. Our phone number is 201-209-9368. Open to your phone calls if you're a conservative or a libertarian or a Nader voter or a non-voter. We're looking for alternative points of view to the pinko left-wing hippie freak vibe that we're putting out the other 23 hours. Let's listen to some early 60s conservative folk music. If you're familiar with the movie, the Tim Robbins movie, Bob Roberts, it's about a folk singer who tries to co-opt it's about a right-wing folk singer, basically. I've never heard the music from the movie Bob Roberts, but there actually was a lot of right-wing folk music in the early 60s, because at that time, folk music was, believe it or not, the hottest kind of popular music in the United States. And conservatives and Republicans were eager to co-opt that, and many of them did. One person who did was named, what was her name? Janet Green, I think. Janet Green. And I have a couple of Janet Green tracks up now that we're going to hear. And then we also have the Goldwaters, another right-wing folk ensemble. Here is A Comrade's Lament by Janet Green.
Sublime.
But now they tell us he was vile and gory.
Vile and gory.
And indulged in every type of vice and crime.
Vice and crime.
Our attitude we change with strict obedience.
Strict obedience.
When the party line declares it must be done. Taking one consideration with another.
With another.
Our comrade's lot is not a happy one. A comrade's lot is not a happy one.
Happy one.
When the workman feels secure in his employment.
His employment.
His ears are tightly closed to every plea.
Every plea.
He listens not to all our provocation.
Provocation.
And spurns the role conferred by history.
History.
The class war has no place in his affection.
His affection.
He won't revolt, as Marx said, must be done.
Must be done.
Taking one consideration with another.
With another.
A comrade's lot is not a happy one. When our agitation duties to be done.
To be done.
A comrade's lot is not a happy one.
Happy one.
Boss has got his problems.
Got his problems.
We'd have no jobs without his careful plans.
Careful plans.
His capacity for winning our affection.
Our affection.
Is just as great as any working man.
Working man's.
All feeling we with difficulty smother.
Difficulty smother.
When our communistic duties to be done.
To be done.
Taking one consideration with another.
With another.
Our comrade's lot is not a happy one. When our liquidation duties to be done,
to be done,
our comrade's lot is not a happy one.
Befuddled, bewildered, forlorn.
his shoulders, and sandals were on his feet. His shirt tail was ragged and dirty, making the picture complete. I followed him.
That's the finest place on earth, but some folks don't appreciate this land that gave them birth. I hear that up in Washington they're having an awful fuss, 'cause communists and spies were making monkeys out of us. The bureaus and departments have been busy night and day. They're figuring out just how we gave our secrets all away. And Congress has appointed a committee, so they said, to find out who's American and who's a low-down red. They call them up to Washington to speak for Uncle Sam, but when they ask them what they are, they shut up like a clam. I wish they'd take and put me on the witness stand today. I'd yell so loud old Stalin could hear me all the way.
I'm no communist, I'll tell you that right now. I believe a man should own his own house and bar and cow.
I like this private ownership, I want to be left alone.
Let the government run its business and let me run my own.
Our government is bigger than it ever was today. The more they hire to work for it, the more they have to pay. Our public servants should be proud and honest, you would think, instead of taking bribes and dressing up their wives in mink. The taxes keep on going up, of that there is no doubt, but still they just can't take it in as fast as they dish it out. Our national debt is a monster size and growing every day. Our children's children, still unborn, are gonna have to pay. Our dollar used to be the soundest money on this earth, but now $2 won't even buy a good old dollar's worth. Unless we stop inflation and take care of what we've got, the communists may win the fight and never fire a shot.
I'm no communist, I'll tell you that right now. I believe a man should own his own house and bar and cow.
I like this private ownership, I want to be left alone.
Let the government run its business and let me run my own.
smile for me, darling. Though the picture of this whole world, it looks so black, I must go and join my buddies in that battle over yonder. Let us kneel down and pray that someday I'll come back. If I never come back to you, little darling, if I die over there, never more to see you, keep your chin up and be brave for me, little darling. Remember, I died for the red, white, and blue. Now some of us must play beyond that blue ocean. Some of us must sleep beneath that cold clay. All can't return to our loved ones, my darling. For wars never were, never will be won that way. If my ticket is one way or that wide old, if after the war you're among the ones dressed in black, try not to be bitter, don't blame nobody. Just try to be glad for the ones who's coming back. If I never come back to you, little darling, if I die over there, never more to see you, keep your chin up and be brave for me, little darling. And remember, I died for the red, white, and
now let's all join in together and sing an old song which I think you all know. I'll repeat the words, you sing after me. Now all the wheat farmers,
now all the wheat farmers,
when they cast their votes,
when they cast their votes,
said we don't want controls,
said we don't want controls,
we'll row our own boats,
we'll row our own boats.
Now this shocked the liberals.
They just can't understand
that the American farmer,
that the American farmer
wants to run his own land,
wants to run his own land.
Now you know in Cook County,
now you know in Cook County,
it has been said,
it has been said,
people go right on voting,
people go right on voting,
even after they're dead,
even after they're dead.
And that's part of the reason,
and it's part of the reason
they were able to win.
They were able to win.
But this time we'll be watching.
But this time we'll be watching.
It won't happen again.
It won't happen again.
Cause all over the nation.
Cause all over the nation.
From the east to the west.
From the east to the west.
The people are saying.
The people are saying.
That Barry is best.
That Barry is best.
All right, all.
Wow, that was the Goldwaters from their right-wing folk record called the Goldwaters. I'm not sure what that one's called. We'll call it Barry is Best. And did you catch the references there to the 1960 presidential election? reportedly stolen by the Democrats, especially in Illinois, where Mayor Daley, after large payoffs from Joseph Kennedy, was happy enough to put a number of dead people on the voting rolls. And Richard Nixon, who lost that presidential race to John F. Kennedy, was aware that there was evidence showing that the Democrats had stolen the 1960 presidential election. But he did not protest it. He did not make an issue of it because he didn't want to be seen as a sore loser. We heard the Leuven Brothers before the Goldwaters there, and I Died for the Red, White, and Blue. This is Conservatives Corral here on the RNC Remix, a web stream running from now until midnight Thursday night. And this is Conservatives Corral for another 33 minutes. If you have an alternative viewpoint that you'd like to get off your chest, give us a call at 201-209-9368. 201-209-9368 is the on-air number. Before the Leuven Brothers, we heard Lulu Bell and Scotty doing I'm No Communist. And some more right-wing folk music before that by Janet Green, who put out a record of a whole bunch of stuff like that. We heard two tracks by Janet Green, A Poor Left Winger and A Comrade's Lament. And that is what we heard here on the RNC Remix on Conservatives Corral. And I want to once again bring everybody's attention to page A13 of the old gray pack of lies, the New York Times today. There's a full-page ad for Patrick J. Buchanan's new book, Where the Right Went Wrong. Patrick Buchanan, one of a growing number of conservatives who takes great issue with the Bush administration. It's a fascinating full-page ad. Here is what Patrick J. Buchanan has to say about Iraq. We invaded a country that did not threaten us, did not attack us, and did not want a war with us to disarm it of weapons we have since discovered it did not have. We may have ignited a war of civilizations it was in our vital interest to avoid. Never has America been more resented and reviled in an Islamic world of a billion people. Well put, Patrick J. Buchanan. However, I would also point out that we did not since discover that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction. Various intelligence agencies knew all along that Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction. However, a cadre of neoconservatives within the Bush administration spent many, many years concocting and fabricating the evidence which was used to sell the world on war. It's a plan that went back to the mid-60s when Wolfowitz and Richard Perle studied under a fellow named Wolfstetter at the University of Chicago, one of the early neoconservatives, and along with help from Douglas Feith, Stephen Cambone, Wolfowitz and Perle and Cheney and Rumsfeld fabricated mountains and mountains of evidence, and they also had the cooperation of Israeli intelligence to concur on the fabricated evidence and make it seem that much more true. And of course, they had help with Ahmad Shalabi as well. And I'm happy that there are a growing number of conservatives out there, including Patrick Buchanan, who seemed to realize it. All right, we continue along now on Conservatives Corral with a record called God, Guts, and Guns and a little anti-gun control number.
In the service, they taught me how to fight. With my own guts and an M16, I fought for freedom's right. The right to worship my own way, the right to speak my mind. The right to have a gun around to protect what little's mine. To protect what little's mine. They taught me how to use that gun and carry it with pride. And though I never use it much, it's still close to my side. I fought for others' freedom, now I'll fight for mine. Americans have worked too hard.
talking about? Well, sir, it don't make sense. It gives the guns to killers. Good folks have no defense. The ones that want guns get them. No, they won't sign their name. They kill with guns, they kill for guns to them. It's all the same. The war is a raging, it's here within our land. Don't you know it's hard to tell where our leaders stand? They're telling folks, give up your guns, we'll make the outlaws pay. They'll nail them, jail them, bail them, let them out in 30 days. Let them out in 30 days. It seems what they call law today's not like it used to be. The time was then when men were men and killers not set free. A man was judged by what he'd done, and judgment then decreed. No such thing as bargaining or plead insanity. Plead insanity. A war is now raging, it's here within our land. Don't you know it's hard to tell where our leaders stand? They're telling folks, give up your guns, we'll make the outlaws pay. They'll nail them, jail them, bail them, let them out in 30 days. Let them out in 30 days. I think we need to take a strong look at this so-called gun control.
All right, Ron DiTullio and Gun Control here on Conservatives Corral on the RNC Remix. Waiting for your phone calls at 201-209-9368. We're on the air now with Al. Welcome to the air, Al.
Hi, Ken. I'm not a conservative, but I am a great hater of today's Democratic Party.
Well, I'm with you there, Al.
And I think that Buchanan's ad speaks directly to one of the reasons why I can't stand them so much. Which is, here's the right, the extreme right is able to actually seize the anti-war movement before the Democratic Party actually does, who've made great pains to distance themselves from anything.
Well,
they really can't, considering they, by and large, supported it. But
I'm happy to see Patrick Buchanan taking the stance he is taking, but I do have to say that I think it is rooted in anti-Semitism.
Well, that may be. I mean, that's been the rub on him for years. And
the thing about the neoconservative movement, people like Fife and Cambone and Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld and Pearl, is that the whole neoconservative mindset is so blindly pro-Israel that, you know, people like Buchanan take extreme exception to that.
Absolutely. Although I don't know if you can actually pin down anti-Semitism on Pat Buchanan. You could certainly nail him as being anti-Israel. He's been consistently.
Well, yeah, and I don't think the two are the same. I definitely don't think. I think that you can be anti-Israeli policy and not anti-Semitic, but I also do think that Patrick Buchanan is an anti-Semite.
But, you know, Buchanan was able to do the same thing when he ran for president. Here's a guy who could stand opposed to NAFTA when the Democratic Party and the Republican Party supported it. It leaves this huge vacuum where no one's able to step into it except for someone like Buchanan or Ralph Nader, who everyone is collectively condemning because, you know, he may lead to the election of somebody who's only marginally more scary than the Democrats.
Well, Al, your distaste with the Democratic Party is shared by me, but I see things a little bit differently than you. I just feel like things have gone so far with the Bush administration that pretty much anything that can be done to put these people out of power has to be done. Is there anything that the Bush administration could do that would make you want to vote Democratic? As much as you hate the Democratic Party.
Well, I think my hatred arises purely from frustration. If New Jersey's tight, I'll probably end up giving in and voting for Kerry and holding my nose as much as I don't want to. It's more like if there was one thing the Democrats could do right now to get me to vote for them, I would gladly do it. I mean, and this is what's driving me nuts, is I really feel like this guy, Bush, is the most beatable president probably in history, and the Democrats are just not even running a campaign. And what's even more frustrating is that these same folks who lost the Gore campaign, who presided over the loss of Congress, are still going to be working on the next Democratic presidential campaign and coming up with excuses like Ralph Nader cost us the election, rather than actually looking at themselves and trying to really arrive at the, you know, some type of changes that might get people behind them again. They don't have a grassroots behind them. The Republicans do.
The Republicans really have their shit together these days, and the Democrats just don't. It's very upsetting.
For years, they had at their fingertips the labor movement in this country, who have all these, you know, kind of organizers out there who could work around every election campaign. But what have the Democrats really offered them during the Clinton years that would inspire any of them to want to really put their feet to the pavement and go work for them? You know, and you could say the same thing about the civil rights movement. I mean, you know, you name it. They just haven't delivered. And they haven't really spoken up and showed any backbone even when they weren't able to deliver.
Yeah, I think 9/11 really destroyed the Democrats because they don't have any kind of decent response to it. And that kind of perplexes me because I think that they can point out just what a horrible job fighting terrorism the Republicans are doing.
They're so terrified of being depicted as being weak that they can never stand up and take a solid position on everything. And, you know,
I don't understand why the Democrats can't start pointing out how few people the Pentagon and the CIA have who speak any of the languages in the nations where we should be hunting down terrorists.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to carve out kind of a nonpartisan attack position, that would be a perfect thing to do, and they're not even doing that. I don't think that the people who are running their campaign are very bright or are in any way in touch with what the American people might, you know, respond to.
Oh, I agree. I agree completely with that. Some of the things that come out of Kerry's mouth, you just can't imagine who is advising him. What I heard, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I heard that Kerry had a really great strategist in Iowa, which is how he won Iowa during the primaries, but then he fired that guy. And the guy who's now his chief campaign strategist is somebody who has never won an election.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's true or not. But
is it the same person who ran the Gore campaign?
That I don't know.
I mean, this mirrors to me the Gore campaign perfectly. They're just assuming somehow that the president is just so awful and this war is so bad, which, you know, both statements are true, that people will just basically vote for Kerry because they have no other choice and they don't have to offer anybody anything or inspire them in any way.
Yeah, I don't know if that's how they feel or whether
they won't take a position on anything.
No, they won't. They won't. I can't stand the Democrats, and if the stakes weren't so high, then I would be voting. I would be voting Nader or Libertarian or something.
Let's imagine for a moment, and you know, I'd love to talk about Nader because I think what's been done to him in the past year is outrageous. You know, I think this guy has, you know, a character that's above reproach, and yet they've found a way to attack him.
No, I don't think he's above reproach.
Well, he's close to it. I mean, here's a guy who's truly devoted himself to the public in his life and, you know, has not profited personally in any way. You know, he hasn't even really entered into politics.
Well, he profits personally from corporate America by owning stock, and he apparently does own quite a bit of stock in some of the very companies that he, you know, criticizes. So I find him a little hypocritical there.
He hasn't tempered his message, though. You know what I mean? I mean, he hasn't backed off from any of the attacks that he's made on corporate America, whether he owns stock or not. On the other hand, I think being that corporate America, among others, are the benefactors of both the major parties, it has really tempered their message. And, I mean, this is largely, I think, the reason why the Democrats, they're afraid of alienating certain constituencies, but I think the main constituency they're afraid of alienating are the ones who are making the big check.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Well, let's imagine for a second that Kerry actually wins. What's going to happen in the next 4 years? That's what I'm trying to think about. I think it's going to be even worse for the Democrats if he wins, because I think he's going to be so awful that it'll usher in another 12 years of Republican dominance.
Well,
because they won't bring any fight. Even if he wins, he's still going to be the same kind of spineless squid that most of the party is right now.
I just feel that it's important to stop the bleeding, because I feel that the Bush administration has started up what is essentially World War III.
Yeah.
It's not taking the form that we thought World War III would take, but they have pretty much declared war on the Muslim world. And they're turning 90 to 95% of the Muslim world into terrorist supporters.
Yeah.
Not terrorists necessarily, but people who support Al-Qaeda. And there's a billion Muslims in the world. This isn't like the Vietnam War, okay, where we were fighting people in Southeast Asia. We're fighting a religion that's worldwide, that's all over the globe. And I don't think that Americans really have any sense, you know, to the degree we are inflaming that world by television networks like Al Arabiya and Al Jazeera that are pretty much telling the truth about what's happening and sending it all out over the Arab world and just inflaming that world against us.
You know, on the left...
And I just don't think the Democrats are going to continue that. And I agree with you. They're Kerry's pathetic. But I just feel like the first step is to get...
So quietly there'll be a diplomatic change that hopefully will lead to... I mean, I think as long as the war continues, which I don't see the Kerry administration bringing it to an end, you're still going to inspire the same kind of hostility that we're experiencing now.
Yeah, well, I don't think the Kerry administration can't just pull out now. I mean, there was a reason why Bush Sr. did not invade Iraq and topple Saddam Hussein at the first Gulf War. And there was a reason why there were so many conservatives who were urging against that in the first Gulf War. And the reason is that you get rid of Saddam Hussein, you create a power vacuum, and suddenly you have Iran, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the Kurds in Israel, and there's a whole regional war going on. And that's what's going to happen if the United States just pulls out. So Kerry cannot just pull out, and he wouldn't just pull out. I wouldn't expect him to, and I wouldn't want him to.
So what's the plan he's going to bring? Because he hasn't really told us about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Good point. I don't know. But all I know is that the Bush administration, you know, and the neoconservatives who are calling the shots in the Bush administration aren't going to fix it. They're just going to keep doing the same thing because this is part of their plan. Their plan is that the United States should just dominate the world economically, militarily. It should dominate the world in every way possible, support Israel no matter what the cost. And basically just try to reorder the entire Middle East, even if we don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Well, that was their plan going in, but I have to think at this point they might be making some adjustments because it's not, this, no matter what they're saying, they must know that this is a complete fiasco and a failure, and it's beyond saving. I mean, that's the impression I'm getting, you know, is that there's not going to be any peace.
Well, according to Seymour Hersh, Israel has already concluded that it's beyond saving, and what Israel's trying to do now is... Cozy up to the Kurds, who have their own de facto independent state in the north of Iraq, and they're basically trying to turn Kurdistan into an Israeli client state so that Israel can have its own little client state right on the border of Iran. Then you have the two nuclear powers in the Middle East, Israel and Iran, soon to be a nuclear power, right next to each other. So then basically what the Bush administration has done is we had a very volatile situation with Pakistan and India, both nuclear powers, on the brink of nuclear war. And the Bush administration is now creating a situation where we're going to have Israel and Iran essentially next to each other via Kurdistan. And you'll have a similar situation there.
Well, I don't see John Kerry's administration being too critical of the Israelis at present. They've kind of almost moved to the right of the Bush administration on Israel and Palestine.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between being critical of the Israelis and what the Bush administration is doing, because people in the Pentagon, like Feith and Cam Bone, they are in beyond tight.
Isn't Feith the guy who's being linked to this?
Yeah, Feith.
Passing on of secrets.
Douglas Feith is the guy. He's the number three man at the Pentagon.
Behind Rumsfeld.
Yeah. Behind Wolfowitz and then comes Feith. So it's Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, and then Feith at the Pentagon. Feith is the guy, along with Richard Perle, who came up with the plan to invade Iraq in the first place. And they came up with the plan back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, I saw the front line that talked about the lead up to
in
it.
In fact, who did they invent the plan for? They invented the plan for Benjamin Netanyahu, then Israeli prime minister.
That I didn't realize.
Yeah. And Netanyahu thought the plan was too crazy. This is an extreme right-wing guy in Israel. He thought the plan was too crazy. So Feith and Wolfowitz and Perle bring the plan back, And they think, you know, it sits around, gets dusty for a while.
Well, you've known all this for years. I've known all this for years. How is it possible that these Democrats in the Senate, like John Kerry, could sit back, allow this to happen without a word of caution? And I went back and looked at what John Kerry said in the lead up to the war. It's not difficult because the Republicans have been putting it out there.
Well, look, I think that you have to talk about the fact that the Bush administration fabricated evidence, and they fabricated very compelling, very convincing evidence.
Why didn't it work on us?
I don't know, but maybe we were lucky.
But it works on people who have greater access than we'll ever have.
I have to tell you that it didn't work. It did work on me.
It didn't work on me for a second. From the moment he made the Axis of Evil speech, I knew they were going to invade Iraq.
Oh, well, of course.
And I knew that they were going to find whatever reason possible to do it. And there was never a question in my mind that there was about the legitimacy of their claims, that they weren't going to find anything.
The fabricated evidence worked on me via the New York Times and the articles and books that Judith Miller wrote. And she was, of course, fed all the disinformation by Ahmed Chalabi. And Chalabi is the guy for Douglas Feith and Stephen Cambone and Wolfowitz. He is the guy. So, you know, that's how I was convinced of the fabricated evidence. And also, you have to remember that they're claiming that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Well, he did have weapons of mass destruction because the United States gave him weapons of mass destruction. So that's why I was even convinced for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Bush administration did such an incredibly great job of fabricating the evidence for war that the Democrats were powerless. I'm being a little sarcastic, but I feel like not everybody's a Robert Byrd.
They had the responsibility, though, you know, as being the only legitimate party of opposition, supposedly a party of opposition in this country, to stand up. And as did the press. And
I think the press is even more culpable than the Democratic Party, because it's the press's job to investigate those claims. It's really not the Democratic Party's job to go out and research and verify those claims. I certainly think that they should be skeptical of them.
Well, the skepticism wasn't there, though. I mean, maybe on the whoever was on the fringes of the party offering that kind of skepticism was quickly dealt with as a wacko, an urban politician, you know, or somebody who's just not in the party's mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And disavowed by the party's mainstream itself. I mean, Joe Lieberman was falling all over himself to embrace the president on this war. You know?
Yeah, well, Joe Lieberman's really... why doesn't he just join the Republican Party?
I know.
And why doesn't Zell Miller, you know...
I can't believe...
What is up with that?
I can't believe that Joe Lieberman actually thought people might want him to be president of the United States. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't get anybody excited about him.
Yeah, the only person who even occasionally was saying things that made me feel like I really supported them was Robert Byrd.
Oh, he was great.
And maybe occasionally Joseph Biden.
Well, Biden, I mean, he's on the Intelligence Committee, I think, or one of those that deals with, you know, national security issues. And I remember him being pretty much behind the build up the war consistently, but maybe I didn't catch everything he said.
Well, like I said, I think that you can blame the Democrats for not standing up, but I think far more blame should fall on the Bush administration for fabricating the evidence.
But because you would expect that from them. And, you know, and the Democrats...
No, I don't think so, no. not to this degree.
What do we have if we don't have the Democrats... If Nader's not legitimate and no other party... Every other party that might, you know, try to emerge is dealt with as a spoiler.
I don't think the Democrats
have a responsibility. And
I don't think you can just say that, oh, yeah, of course the Republicans are going to fabricate evidence and take us to war on... You know, concocted evidence.
I think the historical record would indicate that both parties have done that consistently.
Well, the Democrats have the Gulf of Tonkin behind them to answer to.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
this was different, though. I feel that this was different than even the Gulf of Tonkin. This is
what
so...
would it have taken for a Democrat to step up and say, "Look, 9/11 is clearly not something that was caused." There's no evidence that it had anything to do with Iraq, but we have a great deal of evidence that it was connected to Al-Qaeda, which has nothing to do with Iraq.
Well, look,
didn't hear that.
No, I heard that. There were a lot of people saying that.
How many people in the Senate voted against giving the war powers to the president?
I don't know.
Two.
I don't know.
Two. And neither of them were John Kerry.
Yeah.
You know? And had one of them been John Kerry, I think he'd be ahead by 20 points right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You know what, Al? We have 10 minutes left on
yeah,
conservative current. That's okay. We have another call, so I'm going to thank you for
calling.
You. And we're going on the air with somebody else here on Conservative Corral. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I called before, so if you want to shut me up, do. But I think I can actually argue something as conservative now.
Okay.
Conservative didn't used to mean free marketeer. In fact, that used to be what liberal meant. Mm-hmm. And what conservatives wanted was tradition and respect for achievement and for authority. Some of that the sort of authority we don't like even some sort of aristocracy in Britain. But I think the main problem we've had since the 60s, Dan Hippies, is that the American people have gotten convinced that we should elect people who are just like us, and that we shouldn't look for people who seem to be better than us, because we've made the whole idea of anyone who's better than me, even in a particular circumscribed area like public policy, be one that isn't acceptable to people. And so as a result, we get leaders who are completely spineless because they're not willing to take a position.
Well, you know, you can say a lot of things about George W. Bush, but I don't think you can say he's spineless.
He does an awful lot of polling. He claims he doesn't, but he does.
I mean, I think the man's a radical extremist. I wouldn't call him a spineless. To me, implies that he's just, you know, kind of scared to go in one direction or another. He clearly took a direction, or his advisors took a direction, and they went with it. And it was a very bold move. I completely disagree with it, but I think it was a very bold move what they did.
I think you're right, and I think it's one reason why he's popular, because people have a hunger for someone who isn't spineless. But the only problem is that we've created a situation in which there aren't people who are simultaneously reasonable and willing to go out a little on a limb. Bush does it because he's a nut, basically, as far as I'm concerned. He believes in God, and that's strike one. And he believes that God has a particular plan for him, and that's strike two. So it's a case in which the worst are filled with a passionate intensity. And people like that intensity, and they think that it's the same as sincerity, and they think that sincerity is the same as knowing what you're talking about, and those are different things.
Yeah. I think that Bush is popular because he hit back, and most Americans, they don't even care. They couldn't give a shit. They couldn't give a shit that he hit back, who he hit back, or that he hit back the wrong people. They're just happy he hit back.
Yeah, it's street corner logic or prison yard logic. If somebody hits you, you've got to hit someone.
Yeah, we didn't hit back at all the people who hit us.
Yeah, well,
we waited a month before attacking Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, despite everything that Osama bin Laden had done to the United States prior to 9/11, despite the fact that we knew exactly where his training camps were. We had no plan to attack him. So we waited a month after 9/11 before attacking Al-Qaeda. And then when we attacked Al-Qaeda, we did it with high-tech weaponry. We wouldn't put our own troops on the ground. We used this pathetic group, the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan, to do our dirty work for us. We used the Pakistanis, who are completely intermingled with Al-Qaeda anyway.
And we also got the less fanatic parts of the Taliban to switch sides, so that a lot of the country is actually still under the same people they were under the Taliban.
So even though the Republican Party did an absolutely horrible, pathetic job of hitting Al-Qaeda, I think most Americans are happy that we did anything at all.
Well, I think they are very good at looking tough, looking macho, whether or not it's effective or not. And I'm afraid that a lot of the people, degraded by years of, I don't know, advertising, which is an education in how not to think rationally, mistake toughness for, no, the show of toughness for effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to go to the old idea that a lot of people, maybe most people, lead very frustrating lives, so that when they see someone who's looking bold and who's hitting back anyone, they get a great thrill from it, because there are a bunch of people that they're never going to be able to hit back on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. I want to thank you for your call.
Sure,
bye-bye. This is Conservatives Corral here in the RNC Remix. We are 5 minutes away from airing the soundtrack to Fahrenheit 9/11, which I am told we have now finally located. Many thanks to listener Vicky and once in future WFMU DJ Vicky for helping us out with that. This is the RNC Remix from 1 to 3 today. We are going to be airing the soundtrack, the audio to the movie Fahrenheit 9/11, and at 3 o'clock Mike Lupica, and we've got a bigger problem now, 2 hours of politically themed punk rock from the Reagan and Bush Sr. era. All right, so I'm going to play another great conservative anthem here by Johnny C., another song that was pretty popular back in the day being 1966, height of the Vietnam War. This is Day for Decision by Johnny C. here on the RNC Remix.
The other day I heard someone say, you know, America is in real trouble. It's true. Old Glory has never fallen so close to the earth. Our embassies are being stoned. Our diplomats are often in fear for their lives. And we're involved in a half dozen nameless, winless conflicts, spilling American blood on foreign soil. Our young men are dying for ideals which don't seem to mean too much to Americans anymore. The truth is, America's real trouble doesn't lie in the rice paddies of Vietnam, in the masses of Red China, or in the diabolical intrigues to the south of us. The real trouble lies in the playgrounds of St. Louis, the hillside mansions of San Francisco, and in the slums of Chicago. The disease which is slowly eating away at the heart of America lives in the small southern towns, the fishing villages of New England, and in the hot, dusty streets of the Midwest. This is the age of the American cynic, the year of the unbeliever, the day of doubt. We've killed all the sacred cows and destroyed all the images, and there's nothing left to respect. Old-fashioned love of God, country and family, is passé. We stare at our shoelaces when they play the national anthem. We wouldn't want to be seen at a political rally or a town hall meeting. And we don't want to be caught with our eyes closed during public prayers. We've decided the only way to get into public office is to buy it. Our heroes are the fast guys who get away with things. Patriotism, the old hand over the heart, flag-waving, singing patriotism, has been condemned. Think about this. Patriotism, when you tear away the fancy phrases and crepe paper, is plain and simple pride. It's a new car, prettier girl, bigger house sort of pride in country. Somewhere along the way, we've lost that pride. Our form of government is the same. We still say America stands for the same things. But next time you're at a party, ask someone to sing America with you and see what happens. The basic ideals and structure of America hasn't changed. We have you and me. Our enemies know it. They've seen the newsreels of the discontented marching around the Capitol. They've distorted and blown up our mistakes. They've been putting steel wedges in the cracks in our wall of solidarity. The new idea is, don't attack America. Wear it down gradually. It'll eventually fall under the weight of its own corruption. And did you know? It's working. This sneering complacency, once stamped out by the bloody feet of a tattered Continental Army in 1776, once drowned beneath the keel of the USS Arizona in Pearl Harbor Bay, has risen again. This deadly let George do it attitude lights the way for the Viet Cong and the swampy jungles of Vietnam. This better rid than dead cancer is more feared by the American soldier than all the communist mortar shells. It kills the vitality and spirit of America. Democracy is a frail and fragile instrument made of hope, prayer, and Yankee ingenuity. It is held together by 4th of July flag-waving patriotism, and we've almost exhausted our supply of it. Try this test. Lift your eyes to a flag, then sing out as loud as you can that old, outworn, antiquated freedom hymn you learned so many years ago. For Purple Mountain's Majesty. Above the fruited plain. if you feel a little pride welling up inside of you, if you feel a little mist in your eye, then thank God for you, mister. You're still an American.
America, America, God's head is based on faith. And proud of my good big brother, God's head is my head.
The great Johnny C. in the title track of his record, Day for Decision. And that ends Conservative Chorale here on the RNC Remix. For the next 2 hours, we will be hearing the audio track from the Michael Moore documentary, Fahrenheit 9/11.
Was it all just a dream?
Already in progress.
Bless you, Florida. Thank you.
Did the last 4 years not really happen? Look, there's Ben Affleck. He's often in my dreams. And the taxi driver guy, he was there too. And little Stevie Wonder, he seemed so happy, like a miracle had taken place. Was it a dream? Or was it real? It was election night 2000, and everything seemed to be going as planned.
In New York, Al Gore is our projected winner. The Garden State is green for Gore.
We project that Mr. Gore is the winner in Delaware. This state has voted with the winner in Delaware.
Excuse me 1 second. I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Mike, you know I wouldn't do this if it weren't big. Florida goes for Al Gore.
CNN announces that we call Florida in the Al Gore column.
Then something called the Fox News Channel called the election in favor of the other guy.
Gotta interrupt you. Fox News now projects...